If you can't get enough of the Mixing Music Podcast and want three times the amount of episodes every week, subscribe to our exclusive content for only $4 a month or $40 a year at mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive. Happy mixing, my friends, and enjoy the show.
Welcome to Prime Video's Culture-Rated Collection. This is the place where Black is the main character, where we don't jump through hoops just to hear our voice and can fall in love with illuminating documentaries like Giannis, The Marvelous Journey.
I'm just a hard worker that's trying to survive.
Enjoy the animated series, The Second Best Hospital in the Galaxy.
All doctors report immediately!
Where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction.
Welcome home, baby!
Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love.
I want my music to unify people.
And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop.
This is the cleanest police car I've ever been in my life.
And BMF.
You're about to take over the whole nation.
Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old school greats and new school hits. Prime Video. Find your happy place. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
Hello and welcome back to the Mix of Music Podcast. I'm your host DK, and with me today, unfortunately, Lou just left for a session. He was with us moments ago, but today we have the amazing mix engineer Bob Horn, and with us today,
Lou
special
2.0.
Guest Bob Horn 2.0.
Lou 2.0.
Shaq, who is Bob's current assistant right now. Thank you so much for joining us.
Of course, thank you.
I feel like you said Shaq and then you didn't know his last name, so you said Shaq again.
I was going to say, like, because the full name is it, I don't want to say it, but Shakar?
Shahar Bhusani.
Shahar. Okay. Yeah. Shahar Bhusani.
Yeah. Oh, I have Bhusani. To roll.
Yo, hold on.
You sound Japanese when you say it. It's for a particular reason.
Yeah, I think that's why I kept with Shaq. Well, Shaq is awesome and has been around. We've seen each other a lot recently. So, and more importantly, Shaq has been watching Bob and has a third-party objective perspective and has good, you know, can understand what Bob is doing, what the heck Bob is up to, and kind of can give critique from his perspective as well. So I think this will be an interesting episode.
We say objective, but I'll cash app you later to keep it positive.
I was going
to
say what you don't know. Bob and I had a meeting, and we're going to give you some tips.
Yeah, there you go. And so quick shout out, we're filming and recording right now at the Echo Bar Studios, which is Bob's studio in Los Angeles, in Studio B. This is an amazing room and an amazing location. So thank you so much for letting us be here.
It's not Studio B because it's the second best. It's Studio B because Bob. You see how that works.
Oh, my.
Usually Studio A is the best and has the most
it's
gear.
Studio Bob.
Right. It's Studio
Bob. Studio Bob.
Bob.
Yeah. Okay, then now my studio is now going to be Studio DK. Mm-hmm.
Right.
No, you just need two studios for yourself. Yeah. Studio D and a Studio K.
And they have to be right next to each other. I think that's what it is. And so thank you so much for being here again. And this is going to be a fun one. I was asking Bob what kind of technical topics we can kind of talk about. What's something that he's adamant about and continues to try to, like, you know, preach the gospel about. And I think that Bob was talking a lot about overusing saturation, which is really interesting because it was about maybe a little bit less than a year ago. I did an episode about how people should do more saturation. So this is going to be awesome because I think that you're going to come in with a new perspective, a new mindset. I think this is going to be like hand in hand with what we're going to say. And obviously, you know what the heck you're doing.
Well, that's the unfortunate point is I think... And I don't want anyone to feel insulted, but there's a lot of people that use saturation that don't know what they're doing or they don't have the ears for it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And they do it because other people say to do it or that it should be done. And it's – well, so here's the first thing. Just because you use saturation doesn't mean it sounds more analog. And the saturation that I don't like is – full out distortion when it shouldn't be, and shouldn't when it shouldn't be is an opinion. But here's the thing: is when records come to me and they get mixed, they become more defined, whether that's more clear or more bright or just whatever. They're easier to hear the things in there. That's usually the point of the mix, is to make it more defined. So when that happens and you've already saturated stuff to where I can't reduce it or adjust it, then I'm stuck with it. If it's, you know, if I'm sent files instead of a Pro Tools session, you know, if someone works in Logic or Ableton or something, they send me stems, what they call stems, and it's just files and it's locked in with that saturation. Maybe it's not enough and I need to do more. I want to do more, or maybe it's too much. And that's what usually happens, is that it's too much and I'm stuck with it. And then when I clean things up, you hear more than even you wanted for me. So then, you know, I've done that and people are like, oh, well, you didn't need to saturate the vocal more. And I'll be like, I didn't. That's still you and your saturation. But now the bass and the keys are cleaned up and now you hear your saturation more, or you wanted the vocal brighter, but you didn't think about that when you added the saturation, and now we're stuck. Do you want to re-record the vocal, or do you want me to hide the saturation by making the vocal whatever, dark or whatever? So
that is super interesting. And I think that you're talking about multiple aspects of it. You're talking about the distortion side of it. So if something accidentally sounds like it's clipping, like the vocal during the peak sounds like the preamp got really, really hot or something.
Yeah.
I also assume that you're talking a little bit about the compression artifacts that come from that saturation as well.
So over compression, if it's not reckless and pumping, I can usually fix with more compression, funny enough. But so the saturation from a compression angle, I usually never think it's too much. It's usually the clipping sound. When it's like, when it's supposed to be a distorted vocal, it's like, great, let's do it. You
Especially
know?
On those yeah. long vocal notes where they're like, and it really like starts to feel gritty.
Yeah, but when it's just enough saturation where you don't hear it most of the time, but then at the end of the chorus or on the bridge, they get loud and there's that one note on the vocal that's like, click, a little too much. And then it sounds like I clipped my system or something. And it's like, you don't like it, I don't like it. You know, it's standing out. It wasn't intended, but we're stuck with it because, you know, they processed it. So it's like, in that case, if you're doing saturation on a vocal and you think it's important and it might be heavy-handed or you don't know, send the dry and the saturated, you know? So we have that safety net, you know?
Absolutely. In general, would you put yourself more on the heavier saturation end of mixes or a cleaner end of mixes?
Cleaner.
In general.
But it's probably because of the songs I've gotten lately. Mm. And I use saturation in ways where people, it doesn't scream out like, oh, I better use saturation. So I'll put a saturation on a verb and it'll make the verb easier to hear in a denser mix, and it'll bring the tail up for longer. It'll almost be like I increased the decay, but it's not. I use saturation and stuff like that.
That's actually a pretty cool gem to try out.
Same with delays. Putting saturation on delays. And we have this one saturation plugin by Kush Audio called Omega N.
And, oh, the Neve emulation saturator.
And
yeah.
all I do usually is just strap it on, and however it pulls up stock, it usually does the trick for that kind of stuff. And then I'll use saturation like 808s and basses, where I'll distort them more with decapitator. And then on vocals, I have a FabFilter Saturn preset, but I use it probably 1 out of 20 mixes. It just depends what I'm working on, you know, so it's not always right. And I do a lot of vocal processing anyways. You know, I end up with, you know, 7 to 10 plugins on a vocal doing various different things to achieve what I hear in my head. And I don't want to say stuff gets saturated naturally anyways, but I generally feel like the vocals I'm mixing don't need saturation unless I'm going for that effect.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. That's so interesting. What are Shaq, what are some ways that you've seen Bob use saturation in your mix, in his mixes?
So he mentioned the 808s kicks using decapitator, and I think the way that he uses the decapitator, I remember at the beginning, it really blew my mind, because I'm used to using the decapitator to achieve that obvious, like, all right, we're going for a saturated sound here. Somehow, it's still a mystery to me. and I've been here watching it for 3 months, and it's still some kind of black magic. But I think of saturation as also a form of compression, right? Dynamics get reduced. Bob figured out a way to put Decapitator on kicks, 808s, basses, and somehow they feel more dynamic. I still don't understand how he does it.
Neither do I.
Right, which is why
it's not the transient designer thing.
No, no.
Really?
There's something about, like, I think what it is the way.
Do you blend them in? Do you blend them in, like, the dry wet knob?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, you kind of, like, parallel a little bit.
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah, but there's something about, like, the way it brings them out that makes it feel very dynamic within the mix.
That's really cool.
It's really interesting. So I think that's one. And the other one that really influenced me is the way Bob uses clipping
on
transient
actually.
Sounds, whether it's kicks, snares, stuff like that, that for me really shaped the way I proceeded from that point on with my own mix.
I also got two plugins that are clipping plugins mm-hmm. because of Bob.
Same.
Which ones?
I got the standard clip.
Yeah.
And the Massey Golden Clipper. That Golden Master.
Yeah.
Next, you need to try the JST clip.
JST clip.
Oh.
We actually have a Shack preset.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's right. What was it called?
I think it's called
Shack-a-Smooth.
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 Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's something I don't think we've ever talked about clipping. So let's go a little bit into that. So what is clipping and what is it useful for?
Well, same thing as saturation. It can be used for taming transients, it can use for flat out distortion, you know, it can just, yeah, definitely reducing dynamics. What I tend to use, like, let's take standard clip. So a standard clip, I will take a snare or a really pointy, like, EDM kick or a kick that has a really sharp point on it. Or it could be a hi-hat or shaker or something. Tambourine is great. I just kind of take the ceiling and start pulling it down until it barely turns red. And it's just easier on the ears. And I make sure it doesn't alter the sound musically too much. Like, I haven't shaved off the transient so much that it's creating weird artifacts. It's just kind of touching the top. And I do that before I EQ. So a lot of these modern 808 hi-hats. It's funny to say modern 808 because 808s are from back before our time. Yeah, it's like they're really ticky and like 11K, 13K, like super piercy, and some genres like trap and everything, they want them loud. So it's a lot on your ears. Like if you're in a club or you're just listening loud on your phone, you know, because phones accentuate the high frequency so much because there's a lack of low end. It just shaving off that little tip just makes it easier to tolerate, and then you end up doing less EQ. So anytime you can do less processing when you're not trying to do a drastic change in the sound, the better you'll be, you know.
And I've definitely noticed that on hi-hats. Like on hi-hats and like high.
And I learned that from Clubhouse. We were talking about Clubhouse
really?
On the last episode. So that was and I forget who talked about that, but thank you.
Yeah, it was the day after I got, like, I saw you do it. Mm. I went home, got standard clip, which is like $25, put it on hi-hats, and that top-end clickiness, it almost felt like when I clipped it enough, and this was too much, when I clipped it enough, it almost felt like the hi-hat was, like, pitched down slightly. Mm. Like, it lost that, like, really harsh upper top-end clickiness thing, and I thought it was... Exactly what you said. It was just like really easy to listen to. It was a lot more
present. Do you know why I lowered in pitch?
How come?
It seemed to. Because there were more low frequencies. So if you think of, I'm going to do it from your guys' perspective. So think of a hi-hat has that really sharp transient, and then it kind of has that triangle fade out.
Uh-huh.
So the hi-hats, it'll have the high frequency, which is usually in the beginning. And then it'll have all of its low frequencies too that, you know, we roll off a lot of them, but they're still there. But all the low frequencies are in this part, in the
tail end of it.
The tail end. So when you smash that and that becomes shorter, these are louder, the low frequencies. So it'll seem to, I mean, it did lower in frequency, but it
was definitely a lot more smoother and pleasant, exactly like you said, and I totally recommend that. And it totally sounds different. The Golden Master from the standard clip to, I assume, the JST.
Yeah, they all have their own. JST is very colored, wouldn't you say? Like, mm-hmm. it has a yeah. texture. Mm-hmm. And it what's funny is it's made by Joey Sturgis Tones, which he's a metal guy, I believe, yeah. you yep. know, hard rock metal. And but it's interesting since that's the one genre I pretty much don't work on. I'm just not known for it. I don't have those clients. But it's interesting to have a piece of gear from a guy like that that work. We found a way to use it in our stuff, you know, and that works so well. And then, yeah, standard clip is cheap, but it has the oversampling.
Oh, yeah. It has like 32 times oversampling. Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah. But it's just all little tricks and discovery. Mixing is all about self-discovery, you know.
So there was an episode of Pensado's Place where Dave Pensado touched on clipping, and he said something, and I want to hear your experience around this too. He said clipping is one of those things where it's like an art. There's no right. You just got to feel it out. Granted, we could say that about almost anything in the mixing world, right. But what are some ways that, so because I think technically clipping is different compression in the sense that compression will lower the volume of the wave, but clipping will just chop it off. So it'll go square wave. Is that right?
Yeah.
So what are some other things that, so you said 808s, hi-hats, percussion. When are some other, do you ever use it on the master bus? The mix bus?
I have. There you really have to be careful with it, but it can help you a lot. So K-Clip 3 by Kazrog. That's
another one.
That is a great one, especially on the 2 bus, because it has a, number one, it has a mix knob. So clippers with a mix knob are invaluable, you know, because you can, the thing that I love about mix knobs is you can overdo the processing and then back it off with the mix knob. I do that a lot with a decapitator. I'll make it super distorted and then blend it back. Like on a bass, you get some really cool sounds like that. And then, like K-Clip 3, they have the mid-side processing. They have different tone profiles like smooth and crispy and, you know, stuff like that. And I like that one on kick drums. Like when I want to simulate what I would call, so take like hip hop or trap or drill, especially drill. K-Clip is great for drill kick drums that aren't already drill, which just taking a normal non-clipped kick and making it sound like a drill kick. It just has the right tone to it. But when I'm trying to simulate kind of that, what I would call the producer's mix, which might be a little pushed too much, but I want maybe the kick to have that sound with everything else be clean, then I use K-Clip 3. It's great for that.
That's amazing. That's actually really interesting. So, which goes into kind of something else that we were talking about before we started filming was going into doing too much. Some yeah. people do too much. You want to talk a little bit about that? What does that mean and how you can avoid it or whatever you want to say?
I mean, it's a double-edged sword because I believe that everybody should try to do whatever they have to do to achieve what's in their head, and that's the way you're going to learn the most. But, and again, back to, so I get files to mix in two different ways. I get them as just raw files, which are bounced from the producer's DAW, or if they happen to work in Pro Tools or they recorded the vocals in Pro Tools last, I'll get a Pro Tools session. When it's a Pro Tools session, I can undo what they did, or I can start where they were and adjust stuff. And a lot of things tend to be just too much, and there was a better way to achieve the final goal of that sound, and they just didn't know how to do it, or they had a different opinion to do it. And, you know, I mean, along with the experience, I have, you know, one of the best monitoring environments, you know, one can have. So I hear stuff differently than they heard, you know, like they'll have 10 hertz in their hi-hat and they didn't roll it off because they didn't hear it, you know. But it's like way down there eating up headroom, you know. And that's a situation where they didn't do enough, but it was because they didn't hear it, you know. But back to like saturation or EQ, you know, they'll pull out, you know, a harsh frequency, but they're, you know, 1,000 frequencies off. You know, they're at 3K when it was actually 1.9K or something, you know. So it's great to be able to undo stuff. And I always tell people if they're unsure, give me two versions or give it to me raw. But what I like people to keep are things that change the sound drastically. So if they're taking a sound and totally filtering it to be this little telephone type sound, keep that, because I don't want to have to redo that. If they have these magical spaced out delays and has a flanger on it and it came from Logic and it has its own sound, you know, because all the DAWs, the plugins sound different.
Yeah.
So it's keep that, you know, I'll just work on top of it. I like that, you know. And I've done mixes where people will send me stems completely processed, and it's like I just have 15 stems, stereo stems, and you put them at Unity and it's their mix. So anytime where they want me to go back closer to what they had, I can just put the fader at Unity, take off my plugins, and it's back to what they had. So that's nice, but you gotta be working with people that are decent at mixing and know not what not to do to screw up. So oversaturation, overcompression, you know, on vocals, if someone overcompresses, it's hard to undo, you know. And I don't know, it's like just certain things that we don't need to have to work off of. It just locks us into something that's not as good, you know.
I think the main key thing that you started off saying is that you believe that people should do whatever it takes to get to whatever they hear in their heads.
Yeah.
And I think this is something that we've all seen. And I've done a lot when I was learning. Like I'm always still learning, but in the beginning stages of my career, where when I was still learning mixing, I didn't know what I wanted out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of, I was mixing and producing or whatever to figure out what it could become instead of knowing what it already could be and trying to get there. And I felt like when I knew what I wanted, I naturally did less, versus when I had no clue and I was just trying to figure it out, I naturally did more and did eventually did way too much.
Well, and you bring up a point that makes me think. It's like when I first started, every producer was, you know, over 30 years old and had credits and experience, and he had his own engineer that was, you know, already skilled, and he'd been in the business 10 years and they worked together. And then when that song went to be mixed, it was in good condition. Now the access musically to the world, and as far as especially production, like younger guys that have only been doing it for 2-3 years are getting major placements or placements on indie artists that are doing well, or they have a budget to hire a mixer. So we're getting stuff from less experienced people, which is, that'll create the problems I'm talking about, but it's also great because the whole world musically has opened to people with younger ideas, you know. But it's like when you're in those situations, you don't necessarily have a budget to have a skilled guy with you, you know, helping your rough mix or making sure your tracks are prepared right. So it's a double-edged sword, but, you know. Yeah.
So I think this is one of the things that we've talked about in the past, where, you know, how do you stay interested? How do you keep up with the current trends, or like, how do you continue to progress and be better as an engineer? So Shaq, this is directed towards you.
All right.
How often do you see Bob trying new things? Whether he heard it on Clubhouse or like saw a discount or got on a newsletter or anything, how often is Bob experimenting?
I would say several times a week.
He's
always on some new plugins, trying new techniques, new this and that. A little bit ago, we had to print stems for sessions that were done a long time ago. And we reopened the sessions, and a lot of the plugins he didn't have anymore, or this or that. And I remember him saying, "Why was I so experimental back then?" some of those went a few years back, but some of them were even just a few months back. And it's just like, I have no idea what I did. That's basically the way I interpreted his yeah. vibe looking at it. And even in my time being here, he's always trying new things. Maybe he heard something on Clubhouse. Maybe I was experimenting with something. I was like, oh, hey, Bob, check this out. And then like he would go and experiment on his own. A great example is a plugin that I really like from Brainworks is the Focusrite channel strip.
Mm.
And And I brought it up to him one day and was like, check out this plugin. I really like this. I really like that. At first, the compressor, I wasn't vibing with it too much, the compressor on that channel strip. But he took it, and the next day, he showed me how to use that compressor in such a magical way. That's like, holy shit, like, how did you do that? I've been messing with this plugin for weeks, for months, and haven't been able to use that compressor.
And now I don't use it at all.
And now he doesn't use it at all. Exactly. That was going to be my next point. And now he's on to the next thing.
I think there are definitely times when I pull up an old mix and I remember what state of thinking I was in mm-hmm. when I mixed that. So when you pay for me, you're getting my current ideology's decay, which may change tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've had, so I've done, you know, some tutorials out there in the world, and I've had people that'll email me about a tutorial that I did like 5 years ago and be like, oh, hey, when you did this, this, and this, what were you thinking? And it was like, I did that. It's like, I don't
thinking.
Even know. I don't do that anymore. I don't know.
We're going to take a quick pause for a second and talk about and thank our sponsors. First up, we got iZotope. Thank you so much, iZotope, for sponsoring the show. iZotope plugins, I use them almost every single mix. Definitely have a great range of mastering tools, mixing tools, of dialogue and dialogue editing. Actually, we were talking about clipping earlier, and this doesn't work every time, but every once in a while, I'll get a track, like a vocal that clips slightly. I'll go into Audio Suite and Pro Tools, throw on the newest version of RX D-Clip, and sometimes it cleans it up really well. Hmm. Like, especially that, like, really crunchy stuff. If it's very subtle, it's hard to clean up, but RX D-Clip, they have a bunch of other stuff, and I've seen Bob use the Exciter all the time, quite often.
Transient Shaper.
Transient Shaper, which is like your favorite transient designer. From
the Neutron one.
The Neutron one, yep, mm-hmm. That's right. And Shaq.
But not the Neutron Exciter, the Ozone Exciter.
Ozone Exciter. Yeah, Exciter.
So you got to have all those bundles.
Ozone Exciter.
Neutron
Transient Designer. Transient Shaper. Yeah, so.
Low in focus.
Low in focus. Really?
Match EQ.
Oh, I actually have seen you use, that's one of the secrets with Bob, Match EQ for referencing. And yeah, so it's really, really great. If you're like 10% off, go to iZotope.com/MMPodcast. I almost forgot it. One more time, that's iZotope.com/MMPodcast and use the code MMPod10 to get 10% off your next purchase, excluding Spire and monthly subscriptions. Although that may change, I just got an email from iZotope recently that said they may switch over our offering to a free month of their all-access bundle, which would be nice. Awesome for everybody to try it out. Really nice. Love it. So second off, a file pass. You know what? Just go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/links or mixingmusic.com/sponsors and check out all our sponsors list. Anytime that you purchase anything through our links, we get a little bit of a kickback from it, and it really supports and helps our channel grow. So we really appreciate you. Okay, Shaq, we have another on-the-spot question for you.
Love it.
All right. Objectively speaking, or as much as you can, what is a very Bob mixing trick? This is like, whenever you see Bob do it, it's like, oh, this is so Bob. Like, you see it coming every time.
Oh, wow.
Was that too on the spot?
It's very on the spot. I mean, the thing is that there are a few. Something that's very Bob. Okay. I would say something that also surprised me when I started witnessing the phenomena. two bus processing and how much tweaking goes on there.
I have noticed that as well.
Was I allowed to say that, Bob?
Oh, yeah.
As if it's a bad thing, right?
Well, also, I think we've kind of, you know, stated that I probably will be doing something different in a year. So
yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. Well, I think, and the reason I brought it up like that is two bus is a very polarized subject from my experience. Like, some mixers, some people are like, don't touch the two bus, you know, it's like, don't do this and that, whatever. And others like, yeah, yeah, I mean, do the tubas if that helps your mix. And yeah, so a lot of stuff there, a lot of experimentation there. For example, the recent tricks that you found with what's it called, the Fab Filter Saturn, having Saturn bypassed, how that affects the tone. We tried this
the other day. This is crazy. Go ahead. Yeah, keep going.
Having the tonal balance control just there and how that changes the tone. All sorts of little stuff like that he would go almost as if he has a checklist and just try a whole bunch of different stuff and compare and see what works better. How does this affect this or that? And also not be shy with EQing the tubas. And that's, again, another thing that I've heard from many other people to not do. But then here I go and reach out to assist one of my all-time favorite mixers, and he does all that. I was like, okay, cool. Cool.
Yeah.
That's your answer.
I feel like that's totally, there's no wrong answer with that. I've heard people do it a lot.
10 minutes ago, we were just talking about other people doing too much, and here I am doing.
Well, but the cool thing is, if someone got to experience it, they would see that it's like each processor on the tubas gives you like 0.75% of something. It's not like it's a lot of processing, as in like take all the tubas processing off and it's like, what is this piece of shit?
Yeah.
Am I allowed to say that on the podcast?
Yeah, you're allowed to, yeah. Great. And I want to add this too, which is very, very important, and I want to differentiate this. You said this already, but when Bob does it, and when anybody should be doing this, it's fine. Whatever you do, whether you do nothing or a lot, as long as it's intentional.
Exactly.
And I think the way that you were describing it is that when Bob does it, when he's going through it, like going through his checks, if it's doing anything, if it's helping or not, everything Bob has done is intentional.
Extremely intentional. And even if it contributes the tiniest bit. And if not, take it out.
Yeah, I mean, so it was funny because we were talking about the Saturn 1, the OG Saturn, and you have HQ on, but the plugin is bypassed. And it sounds like there's some sort of algorithm in the plugin where it may upsample it or something like that, which changes the tone slightly. And granted, I'm not used to your speakers, and I'm not used to this room.
But you heard
it. And I'm not hearing, I don't know, I think I heard something, but I'm not confident enough in what I heard to be able to put my name on my opinion there.
So did you end up trying it at your studio?
I don't have the first Saturn, actually.
Okay. So for those that are wondering, the code must be written for the high quality button around the bypass, like after the bypass or something, because the plugin makes a difference when you have that button on and you have the plugin bypassed, so you're not saturating anything because the plugin's bypassed. The effect is bypassed, but something's happening sonically, and it does something to the mid-range. It, like, cleans it or something. Like, makes it more dense. And that was also a Clubhouse discovery. Some people were talking about it. And I believe John Castelli is the guy who kind of discovered that and kind of put it out.
That's
there.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
That is so interesting. So, I mean, there's lots of stuff. I mean, I've seen you do... Also, I've seen, like, when you EQ the mix bus, I've seen you do, like, really, really small stuff, too.
So... I used to do, years ago, I would do a lot EQ-wise on the tubas and then compression-wise. And I kind of got away from that a year ago. And I was a little more paranoid about stuff on my master bus. So the things I put on my master bus now, I will put EQ, but I'll wait as late as I can in the mix. And I will do things that I'm pretty sure I want on every sound in the mix. So... if I'm EQing the tubas because the snare is harsh, that's a bad move. Because if I'm pulling out 4 kilohertz, I'm affecting the vocal, the piano, the synth, the top end of the bass. So it's better when I start going down that road, I'll stop myself and I'll go to the individual instruments that need to be addressed and fix them there. Before, I would just do whatever I needed to do on the tubas and it would look crazy at the end. And so now I'm a little more conservative with that, but I have things like lately I've had the Saturn thing, and then sometimes I would use the isotope tonal balance control, which is basically a meter that gives you access to other isotope plugins, but the actual the plugin has a sound to it. And it does change things, and it does not null, does not survive the null test. If you bounce one with and one without and put them together and flip one out of phase, there's something left. So that's another one that can positively or negatively affect the sound. So I'll audition that sometimes. Sometimes I'll use Golden Massey, or Golden Master by Massey, which is kind of a limiter clipper, but it definitely has a tone to it. And sometimes it doesn't work. You know, Limitless has a good sound to it. Sometimes it doesn't work, but I like that as a brick wall limiter at the end. Sometimes I'll flip over to who makes that? AOM Invisible Limiter instead.
I've seen you use that one, yeah.
Yeah. I tend to stay away from straight old school compression on the tubas. Occasionally I will use it if I need it. But the only, and then other times I have this thing that I do with Avid Pro Compressor where I have the mix, it's only like 20% wet, maybe 25. And I have a limit to how much it has a knob that'll keep it from over compressing. So I have that set to -4, so it won't do any more than 4 dB reduction. And I have the mix at 20% wet. So that adds kind of like a punch. But other than that, I won't do any 100% wet compression, you know, old school compressor stereo bus. I tend to just do stuff on individuals and submasters. And then I'll have weird things like Leap Wing Center 1, which is similar to Wave Center. And I'll pull down the center of my mix, like 1 dB. And it just kind of makes it wider and kind of sinks in the kick, snare, and vocal. Because I tend to mix those things loud. So that's the other thing is different things work for how I mix and it may not work for other people.
Yeah.
Other people may need the opposite. You know, they might need their mix more narrow and the center brought up, you know. So works for me, may not work for someone else, you know.
But I think that's a key here. Like you say, what works for me might not work for someone else. But as you were describing all those things, you were also describing how sometimes that works and sometimes not.
Yeah.
And that's what I was trying to say, that like you don't just slap things on the two bus. It's there's a lot of experimentation going on there. It's like, does this serve this song? Yes, no. Get rid of it if not.
Except the high pass or no, the high frequency shelf of SPL pass EQ. By Plugin Alliance, I put that at 13K and I boost 1.5 dB, and that's the last 2 months it's been on every mix.
Yeah, that's
when I just do and it's on.
You told me
about the
beginning that.
And I leave it and I like it.
That one sounds really good. I like that one. So on that note, I mean we've been talking a while and I think everybody's gotten some really good insight from this episode. Bob will be coming out. It always comes out with more and more content if you just YouTube Bob Horn or Bob Horn Mixing. Bob, you have a website, bobhornmixing.com, Instagram, Bob Horn Mixing, Clubhouse, Bob Horn Mixing. If you have any questions, seeking advice, or just want to follow someone really, really cool, check out Bob Horn, his stuff. Thank you so much for joining us, Shaq.
Oh, thanks for having
Appreciate
me.
Appreciate you being here. And on that note, happy mixing, everyone, and stay saucy.
1, 2, 3.
Is episodes once a week not enough for you, or are you looking for more technical information from the Mixing Music Podcast? Well, guess what? Now you can. You can subscribe to our exclusive content and triple the amount of episodes that you get access to. That's right. Instead of the free once a week episodes, you get 3 episodes a week for only $4 a month or $40 a year. Go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive to get access to those episodes now.
This is the place where Black is the main character, where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction. Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love. And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop and BMF. Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old-school greats and new-school hits. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.